98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
Oh, it's Friday. It's a football Friday. The NFL season is here.
Full weekend.
Yeah.
Full weekend of a slate. How about that?
I know, right? It started last night with the most predictable season opening game you could possibly imagine. There's Tampa Bay down a point with, you know, 2 points, whatever it was, with a minute and a half to go and the length of the field to drive. And Tom Brady, dink, dink, dink. And you just knew.
You just knew.
It was.
Yeah, listen, I tweeted out something that would never, ever happen. I mean, it would never happen. But it's almost like you're better off going for it on fourth down. I think you have a higher rate of converting a fourth and five or six and not, but then you do if Tom Brady with a minute and a half and a timeout in his pocket, like going down the field and getting a field goal.
I know. It would never happen. You're right. It would never happen. But it's so freaking automatic when Tom Brady has the ball in his hand like that. There's no drama to that. There's no suspense. None.
No. Can you imagine it? You know, why didn't you kick the go-ahead field goal with a minute and 50 seconds left? Well, because, you know, I didn't want to give the ball back to Tom Brady. No, I mean, no coach would ever do it.
No.
Ever.
Ever.
But I sat there watching that game last night being like, okay, good luck. You're up by 1 point and Tom Brady's got the ball. Okay,
do you guys remember that high school football coach who refused to punt few years back?
No.
He was in Texas and his high school team would never punt. They would always go for it on fourth down.
I saw a story on that just last week.
Yeah, because he's now the head coach at Presbyterian, which is an FCS.
Something points, right?
His quarterback threw for 10 touchdowns last week.
Yeah, refuses to punt.
Just won't. Does he even have a punter on the roster?
Ooh, well, that's a good question.
Punters aren't football players.
Well, neither are quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks, kickers, punters,
and
a whole list of guys who aren't actually football players. I wonder if he actually has a punter on his roster or not. But it was still fun. I mean, it was, and man, they got huge, big, giant Bofo ratings last night. And I imagine locally, the Cardinals will get huge, big Bofo ratings. And that, of course, is our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Nashville, Tennessee, 10 o'clock in the morning, Sunday. The Arizona Cardinals, the Tennessee Titans, game one of the 17-game slate for the Arizona Cardinals. And as Mitch said in the update a moment ago, do not forget that Steve Keim, the general manager of the Cardinals, will be making his Burns and Gambo debut, if you will. At 3 o'clock today, we are home to the Steve Keim interview now with all the changes we've had here at the station. So we're looking forward to having Steve on the show at 3 o'clock. We've got a lot to talk to the general manager about. But Cliff Kingsbury today, one last press conference before they get on the plane tomorrow to go to Nashville. And he's very, very excited about this game and the measuring stick it provides.
Particularly playing a team that has Super Bowl ambitions, has been on the rise the last couple of years and playing at an extremely high level, added one of the best players in football. So it's a great measuring stick right off the bat to kind of see where we're at and where we need to go.
Sure is. He's absolutely right. Measuring stick game.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I was reading into Tennessee and A.J. Brown. I'm going to be good to go versus the Cardinals. I mean, they're ready. They've got Super Bowl aspirations. They got a running back who's trying to go for 2,000 yards, to be the first running back ever to go for 2,000 yards in back-to-back seasons. Like, nobody's ever done that. So, you know, they've got Julio Jones. And, you know, I was reading something you sent me about, you know, how pumped they are. They sold out of jerseys and they have tickets they sold because of Julio Jones. And they're pumped. Like, it's going to be hot. You're going to be on the road in a hostile environment with a fan base that believes that they've got a team capable of winning it all.
It was funny, that story you referenced. I was reading that story on The Athletic today, and this picture they painted was in many ways very Cardinal-like in that they say, you know, Nashville is kind of this destination city, and a lot of visiting fans like to go to Nashville to watch their team, and they party down on Broadway Street, so the crowds aren't always as pro-Titans as you'd like them to be. There's a lot of visiting fans in the stands, and I know, you know, the Bird Gang Travel Club, they're heading out to Nashville this weekend to watch the game, but what they're saying is the minute they got Julio Jones, all of that changed. the minute they got Julio Jones, between how good they've been under Vrabel the last couple of years, how good Tannehill's been, how great Derrick Henry has been, now you add Julio Jones to the mix, and suddenly there's this sense of anticipation in Tennessee for this season that they say hasn't been there since, like, prime Eddie George, prime Steve McNair, right? I mean, like, the high point of the organization. That's the level of anticipation they have in Nashville and in Tennessee over this team. Because normally, and you know this, man, that's a college city, and that's a college football state. And it's been tough for the Titans to kind of make inroads there, competing with the Tennessee Volunteers, even though they haven't been very good. That's still, they're hugely popular there. This team, they feel like, has a chance to kind of break through. And all of that kind of adds up for what should be a really daunting road trip for the Cardinals this weekend.
There's no question. I mean, you come away with a win here, you're going to feel like, look, I believe they are the only underdog this week in the NFC West.
I believe you are correct, yes.
Right? I think everybody else, Seattle's favored, the Rams are favored, the 49ers are favored. So, you know, there's a lot of belief that this is the toughest game in the division, and I think it is. I mean, this is not, I would not have wanted to open my schedule. When the schedule came out, okay, that's not an easy game for the first one. I mean, you're probably supposed to lose this game. You are. You're probably supposed to lose this football game.
Yeah.
If they come away with a win, you're going to be sky high. But, you know, this is not an easy task going against this team. With their, you know, I mean, the only thing you're hoping for, as we've said time and time again, is that they're, you know, you're catching them early when they haven't had a lot of time to practice and get in sync and build the chemistry. That might be a benefit to you, but that's the only thing I'm really leaning on is that.
We'll talk more about how tough this matchup is going to be coming up in the next segment of the show. Let's focus on the Cardinals and kind of the dotting some I's and crossing some T's with this football team. Cliff Kingsbury today. Dennis Gardeck will not play this week with a hand injury he suffered this week in practice.
Yeah, he had an injury yesterday, so he won't play this weekend.
Could Dennis possibly miss multiple weeks?
Possibly, yeah.
So he could be out multiple weeks, potentially. How is he handling that?
He's a bit down, but we're hoping it's not too long. And like we've said all along, we're going to err on the side of caution, and it could be more of a blessing in disguise to really let him get healed up over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll get him back.
So he's listed as out. Antoine Wesley, the wide receiver, is listed as out. Other than that, Darrell Daniels, the tight end, he was the only other player for the Cardinals on the injury report, and he's got no designation at all. He was full participation today. So it sounds like, I mean, Wesley, I don't think they were counting on much anyway, so it sounds like really the only regular who won't be available to them is Dennis Gardeck, and of course Jordan Phillips, who was already on the IR from a week ago, Gambo.
Well, I mean, he's special teams captain. He was second to Hassan. He was second to Hassan Reddick in sacks last year. So when he showed up on the injury report, like, listen, we knew the knee was, he had to rehab all offseason. He tore his ACL in week 15, you know, to come back. Now, you tear your ACL in week 1 or 2, okay, 3, 4, good chance you're going to come back okay. You tear it in week 15, it's hard to make it back. But he looked like he was on pace. He got removed from the physically unable to perform list late August. But they're going to play it safe with him. They have to play it safe with him. And the hand injury, I mean, Cliff alluded to this. It could be a blessing in disguise. Could it gives him more time to heal the knee.
Yeah, and we're going to talk, as I mentioned, with Steve Keim about this a little bit later. But understand there were three players that were protected on the practice squad by the Cardinals. One of them, you would think, on the surface, would be kind of Dennis Gardeck insurance. That's Kylie Fitz. He was protected on the practice squad. And then the other two were cornerbacks in Rasul Douglas and Antonio Hamilton. I know we were talking a little, I think it was yesterday, the day before, about which of those guys might potentially be active on game day, given how kind of thin they are at the cornerback spot. And, of course, now with Gardeck out, I would imagine possibly a couple of those players being on the 53-man roster for Sunday's game against Tennessee.
Yeah, we'll know tomorrow for sure who's getting flexed. But, you know, between Douglas and Hamilton, you got to figure one of those corners is – and then you'll know. I mean, one's more of a – you know, Hamilton's more of a special teams player, but he's got experience at corner, and Douglas has a lot of experience at corner. So what do they need more? They need more of a corner, or do they need more of a special teams guy?
Yeah, and we'll, like you say, we'll get an idea about what their plans are when it comes to that tomorrow. The game starts at 10 o'clock. Steve Keim is coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And as Cliff said, you can feel the excitement for the week.
You definitely feel the excitement of practice, intensity, and focus was really good today. So just got to hydrate, take care of our bodies, and be ready to go.
Yeah, hydrate, because it's going to be hot.
No, we get plenty of heat work, you know, the last couple of weeks being outside. We know it'll be hot, it'll be humid, and I feel like we've had some similar temperatures, so I'm hoping we're prepared.
What did you say, 94 with humidity, right?
Is 94, yeah. Oof. Hottest temperature they're going to have in, like, these next 2 weeks.
It'll be crispy.
They'll have this game. You saw it last night in the Tampa Bay game. You could see guys cramping up a little bit because of the
heat. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you can see McCarthy. He looked like he was dying out there. And that was a night game in Tampa Bay. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's no surprise the Cardinals are considered the underdog in Sunday's game against the Titans. Some are taking it as far as to suggest it could be a dominating performance by the Tennessee Titans. Talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. So we have our show prep meeting every day, 1 o'clock, an hour before we're on the air, and Jordan and Mitch and Gambo and I, we all get together and we get in a room and we talk about what we're going to talk about on the show, and we kind of come up with a real rough draft of what we're going to discuss. And one of the stories that I believe this one, yeah, came from Gambo. Four bold predictions for week one versus the Cardinals. This came from a website called clutchpoints.com. If you were to read these four bold predictions for the Titans, you would think the Arizona Cardinals were not 3-point underdogs, but they were 13-point underdogs.
You would take that FanDuel free money and put it all on the Titans.
That they were 23-point underdogs. That they were 33-point underdogs.
You can't win!
That they were, seriously, Adrian, that they were UNLV playing ASU Saturday night in Tempe, Arizona. Yeah. It's like you read these, he goes, is there anything the Tennessee Titans can do wrong in the eyes of clutchpoints.com?
Man, Titans defense shuts down the Cardinals. All right. Said, you know, they look for Tennessee's defense to be on top of the game Sunday, as this is a young, hungry group looking to prove themselves. Okay? So their defense shuts down the Cardinals. Look, we know if that happens, this game's over, right? I mean,
yes.
If that happens, and that's a win. There's a few things that have to happen for the Cardinals to win this game. That's one thing that can't happen. Because the Cardinals aren't winning a 13-10 football game against the Tennessee Titans. I don't care how, you know, how much or how little practice those guys have had together. Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, I don't care. You're not winning a 17-14 football game. This will be, no matter what the heat is, this should be a high-scoring game. If the Titans' defense shuts down the Cardinals, they will win the game.
Yeah, that was one of the bold predictions. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones combined for 250 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. That was a bold prediction. Ryan, this is my favorite one. Ryan Tannehill has a near-perfect game. Okay. Derrick Henry takes an early lead on the rushing title. I mean, I read this and I thought, okay, I'm just going to the gambler in me, because we've been talking a lot about that this week for obvious reasons.
I got so many messages from people. I won this and I won that. I guess that's what it's going to be now. My
I guess
Twitter
so, right?
feed's going to be people telling me how much money they won with the free money they got on all of these things yesterday, right?
So I go and I check the spread just to make sure it hasn't, like, mushroomed overnight. Nope, it's still Tennessee Titans favored by 3 points. But then you see the predictions, and I went to ESPN.com today, and they've got Josh Weinfuss and Teron Davenport, the guy we had on yesterday who covers the Titans. They both picked the Titans to win. I watched a video this morning on NFL.com, a preview video, and afterwards they put up the predictions of the 10 different writers at NFL.com. All of them pick the Tennessee Titans to win this game. So I'm gonna flip it on its side here a little bit if I could. What if the Cardinals come back with a win against the Tennessee Titans? Will that amplify or change our expectations of this team this year if they go into what could be a very hostile environment and come out with a win? You say yes.
Yes. Yeah, you go win that game. I'm not expecting them to win this game. Are you?
No, I am not.
No.
No.
So if they win this football game, first of all, it's a road win. Again, and when it's one of the games you kind of factored in and you weren't going to lose. So, yeah, I mean, I would think that we come in here on Monday and the Cardinals find a way to pull out a win. I don't even care how they do it. As long as they come away with a win, yeah, that's going to go a long way towards, you know, and not a long way. It's only 1-17. But I would definitely help in the belief that this team's for real this year.
It will absolutely. And you're right. It's just 1-17. And we'll probably do this exercise on Monday or Tuesday. We'll go back and look at week one of last year. And we'll see some results that just don't make any sense. Results that were like, how did that happen? You know, strange things happen in week one. But in terms of the perception of the ability of the Arizona Cardinals to be even better than some people thought, there's zero doubt that if they go to Tennessee and beat the Titans, no matter, forget all the rust factor and, oh, they haven't played, like all that stuff you said at the beginning of the segment. If they come back with a win against Tennessee, it will dramatically shape our perception of the Cardinals and how good they can be in 2021. That's the power of week one in the NFL. That's what it can do.
Listen, I forgot to include this in my my email this morning, but I had this tagged to something I wanted to talk about. The best trios, wide receiver, running back, the best wide receiver, running back trios in the NFL this year. And it was a story on it. Number five, Green Bay, Aaron Jones, Davante Adams, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Number four, Tampa Bay, with Ronald Jones, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin. Number three, Seattle, Chris Carson, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett. Number two, Minnesota, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, and Adam Thielen. Number one, Tennessee, Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and Julio Jones. But here's what I liked, what it said about it. This is an entirely different argument, but you can make the case that the Henry, Brown, Jones trio is the most physically imposing combination of skilled players ever put on a football field. The 6'3", 247-pound Henry just came off a 2,000-yard season. The 6'2", 226 Brown made the Pro Bowl, topping 1,000 yards with 11 touchdowns. And the 6'3", 220-pound Jones should be healthy and back to putting up 1,400-yard seasons. I'll say that again. This could be the most physically imposing combination of skilled players ever put on a football field. So, I'm going to send this to you.
So I forgot
to send it to you earlier.
Well, that's okay. You don't need to send it. You said it, so that's we're good. But that is... You talk about bold takes. I mean, we're not that article isn't suggesting that those three are the most physically imposing threesome in the NFL this year. You're talking about
ever.
I mean, they use the word ever to describe it. Okay, look. I think the Tennessee Titans are good too. It's amazing to me how full circle we've come this week. At the start of the week on Tuesday, every story written, every story we talked about when it came to the Titans was, oh, there's some concern. Ryan Tannehill hasn't had a lot of time with Julio Jones, and there's going to be some rust, and it might be a little awkward at first because they had. And 4 days later, we went from, oh, it's going to be rusty, it's going to be rough, they might not be on the same page, to they are the most physical threesome of wide receivers and running backs in the history of the National Football League. That, my friends, is what full circle looks like. That is.
Look, you're a Dallas Cowboy fan. Okay, and you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, and you're on the road against Tampa Bay to open the season, and you're trying to find ways that you believe your team can actually win the game, right? You don't really believe they're going to win the game, but you find trying to find ways that you think that they could win the game.
Okay,
so you know, that's what it is. I mean, you know, nobody would have anticipated four turnovers, and all of a sudden you're in the game. Your kicker blew it. But, I mean, I think in every game, you're looking like, you know, from a Cardinals perspective, what are ways that they can win the game?
Yeah.
And you're trying to – and that's just – we harp on, well, they haven't had a lot of time together. They didn't play in the preseason together. Guys were on the COVID list. They haven't practiced together. There's no chemistry. You know, all of that, you know, that's just – hey, it's an angle. Doesn't mean a damn thing. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. When people would play the Suns in the playoffs, what was the first thing that you would see from other writers and national guys?
They don't have any experience.
Yeah. No experience. You could beat the Suns. Yeah, the Book's never been in a playoff game. There's DeAndre and McHale. No experience. It doesn't mean anything. You're just looking for, okay, here's an angle that, you know, you think this could be a factor. We always say this, right? There's so many factors in winning or losing a football game. It never comes out to just that one thing.
No.
But, you know, we're looking at that. Is that a factor? Now, maybe on Monday, those guys, Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, and they have an unbelievable, if they have 500 yards of offense and they score 35 points, so much for not having any chemistry.
Right. And
so much for not playing together.
And if they do that, and if they thump the Cardinals real good on Sunday, then I think the power of perception also will shape it as, ooh, are the Cardinals in trouble? I mean, they went on the road, and if they get thumped by Tennessee, just as much as a win would help inspire confidence, if they get thumped, like real good thumped, that also has the power of perception to kind of shape what we think about them going forward. I still think at the end of the day, the goal is the same. If you go to Tennessee, play competitively, and you lose, it's not the end of the world. You just got to beat Minnesota and Jacksonville the next couple of weeks to come out of the first 3 weeks 2-1, and you're fine. And you're fine. From that, you can kind of build off of that. But the power of week one, man, it really shapes perceptions of a football team going forward. The Cardinals' home opener is next Sunday, and we're giving you the chance to be there for the return of the Red Sea. What you need to do is text the word Red Sea right now to 62620, then listen for your name starting next Monday at 7:35 in the morning, 1:35 in the afternoon, and 3:35 in the afternoon, and you could win a pair of tickets to the home opener. Plus, one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey, courtesy of Pristine Auction. Again, that's Red Sea to 62620. Gambo referenced it a second ago. The Bucks and the Cowboys started the regular season in exciting fashion last night, and in the process, Bruce Arians, a little bit of a teaching moment for BA's, the guy who's got BA's old job in Arizona. We'll explain how next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Mitch is here with us. He has our Twitter poll question of the day on the Burns and Gambo Show. Hi, Mitch.
Hello, Burnsy. Hi, Gambo.
What's up?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Fantastic. Doing good.
Yeah, good.
Football Friday. All right.
Oh, it's a good Friday, isn't it?
It is a good Friday because we're going to have a Cardinals game to talk about when we come in here on Monday. The question is, what kind of Cardinals game are we going to have to talk about?
Indeed is the question we are asking to our listeners. So we ask, your prediction for this Sunday's Cardinals-Titans game. Four options as
Pain.
We usually do.
Pain.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Do you know what that is, Mitch?
Prediction?
No, do you know the prediction?
When we say pain, what that's
was
from?
Wasn't that Tyson?
Rocky 3.
Rocky 3.
It was Rocky 3.
See, if I'd have seen the other... How many Rocky movies are there now?
17 and a half.
Yeah. And then they've got the Creed movies, too.
When you count the Creeds, it's
I
like 23.
I can't keep track anymore.
Yeah, it's okay. Rocky 3.
Sylvester Stallone just going to keep cashing those checks, man.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely.
Until the day he dies.
All right.
Probably
so,
after he's dead, too.
Probably. He'll come back from the afterlife to haunt Creed's grandson or something.
You want these gloves? Yeah.
Wow. Look at that.
That was close.
An unexpected Sylvester Stallone impersonation here on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, so what was the question again? A prediction?
The four options for predicting this Cardinals-Titans game, as we do here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Cardinals win big. Cardinals win close. Titans win big. Titans win close. And close being a game separated by a single possession.
So 8 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to pick big. I'll go with Titans win close.
You know, I'm just going to be honest. Titans win big.
Okay.
Titans win big.
Woo!
There.
By more than a possession. I think the Titans win by more than a possession.
That's not a reverse jinx type move there?
No, that is just, you know what? Life is too short for me to be anything but honest, and I just kind of think that's how it's going to go on Sunday. So, Titans win by more than a possession.
Well, I appreciate the honesty, but
that's what we're here for.
But the audience is feeling a little more optimistic.
Of course, they say
Cardinals win close, 47%. But then it's the Titans winning close, 33%. Titans win big, 12.1%. Cardinals win big, 8%. So they're expecting, regardless, a close game.
All right, that's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. One word, at Burns and Gambo is where it's at. Mitch is waiting for you to follow us, at Burns and Gambo.
29-28 Cowboys, 7 seconds left. Good snap, the spot. Here's the kick by Sucker. Is it good? It is good!
I told our guys, I learned a long time ago, you don't learn anything more from losing than you do from almost losing. All right, we got a lot to learn. Obviously not pleased with the start of the game. Love the finish. Our guys are winners. They're going to finish, and they're going to win. But we can play better and not put ourselves in that situation.
Highly predictable outcome last night. Sure. Tampa Bay Buccaneers down late, minute and a half to go. Tom Brady, dink, 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 dink. Ryan Succop field goal, and the Bucs win. Man, we've seen that movie 40 times now over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and there's a lesson to be learned for Cliff Kingsbury there in that game last night. And you know what that lesson is? Save your freaking timeouts! Because after the turnover by Godwin, right? I mean, they're about to win the damn game. After that turnover, man, it looks like Dallas is going to pull this thing. Dallas is going to pull this thing out. But what did Bruce have in his back pocket?
Three timeouts
with under 2 minutes left. He's got three timeouts. He's able to stop the clock twice when Dallas has the ball. And then he uses a timeout after a false start penalty on his own team to prevent a 10-second runoff. This is the lesson that I hope Cliff learns. You can't blow a timeout early third quarter because the play clock is about to expire because you didn't get the play call in time. Or somebody's not lined up the right way. or whatever reason, like you just can't do it. You get to that, you get to the end of that game, and you're saying, "Oh wow, okay." Who didn't think Dallas was going to win after the turnover? Who didn't think Dallas was going to win?
I thought they were going to win.
There wasn't a lot of time left, just a decent drive. But the problem was that Bruce had three timeouts. He used two of them to stop the clock when Dallas had the ball. And then Dallas kicks the field goal, and there's a minute and 40, 50 seconds left. And Tom, you got one timeout, Tom Brady, and a ton of time left on the clock.
Yeah.
And there's nobody, nobody that didn't think that Tampa Bay was going to win the game when they got the ball back. Nobody.
No, no, I didn't. I wasn't really making it up. I think it's the 40th time in his career Tom Brady has led a comeback like that. And there's no... You just expect it. You just expect it. It was an 11-play, 57-yard drive. It was methodical. It was simple. There wasn't much fancy to it at all. Just very accurate.
The play to Gronk was, I'm going to block, I'm going to block, I'm going to release, and here I go.
And here I go. And I'm wide open. Right. And he used his weapons. I mean, you're talking about more than 90 yards to Gronk, a couple touchdowns. He got Antonio Brown involved. He got Godwin involved.
He got away. Him and Godwin got away with a push off.
It was a little bit of a push off.
It was a lot of a bit of a push off.
There was some separation there. Yep, those are calls that defending Super Bowl champs opening the season at home on Thursday Night Football. Those calls tend to go their way, right?
Oh, went their way.
Yeah, it definitely went their way.
I mean, Brady got the ball back with a minute and 24 seconds left, and it's too much time. And I said this, and listen, I said in the beginning, in the opening, and facetiously, is that the word? Like, it's never going to happen. The Dallas is not going to go for it on 4th and 5 or 4th and 6 when they can kick a 47-yard field goal because you want to take the lead and rely on your defense. But I would love to know what the odds are, giving Tom Brady and only needing a field goal. Tom Brady with a minute and a half left in a timeout. What's the chances that you're going to stop him? They can't be good. They can't be good. I mean, I just, I got to be honest with you. I don't think it's ever happened. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, other than the Presbyterian coach who never punts, right? The guy, the high school guy who now he's the coach of Presbyterian and he never punts. But no, it will never, not at the NFL level, it will virtually never, ever happen like that. Because can you imagine how Mike McCarthy, if he had gone for it and not gotten it and lost the game,
he'd be torched.
He'd be torched today. Absolutely.
Right, but your chances of winning the game are better going for it on fourth down than giving Tom Brady at home a minute and a half left on the clock with a timeout. It's just, you weren't going to win.
Yeah.
He didn't need to get a touchdown. He only needed a field goal. He was down a point.
I saw some. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
Like I said, it's never going to happen. Nobody is ever going to do it. But I crossed my mind last night that you're almost better off going for it on fourth down and giving him the damn ball back.
I was watching Good Morning Football this morning, and they pointed out that it's like the Buccaneers' first team in, no lie, 81 years, 81, to win a game despite losing the turnover differential by three or more and giving up 30 first downs. Like, there's a million reasons why Tampa Bay could have lost that game. And if Greg Zuerlein hits a point after, hits a, 34-yard field goal. I mean, those are four easy points you're just leaving on the field. It would have changed the whole game. But he didn't, and the Bucs do what they did. The ratings were huge. A 5-year high for the TV ratings last night for the opener. Lots of attention, lots of eyeballs on it. Cliff Kingsbury gave his thoughts on it this morning.
I watched it today, the film of it. First off, I mean, the Brady at 44 throwing like he does is incredible. And then Dak was awesome, hung in there, took shots all night. I mean, threw it 60 times. I thought it was a great game just watching the film.
And, we do, just real quick, have to give it up to Dak Prescott. And I don't like the Cowboys. As much as you don't like Brady, I don't like the Cowboys.
Nice to see him back.
Given that was his first game back in 11 months after that horrific injury, God, he played really, really good.
Yeah.
Really well last night.
He had a good connection with C.D. Lamb.
Yeah, yeah.
They easily could have won that game. Antonio Brown looked good, too.
Yeah, he did.
He looked good.
He did.
On that talk. Godwin was good. Brown was good. I mean, look, none of the turnovers were Brady's fault. Even the one in the end zone, we just held, threw it up there, and that guy almost broke that.
Yeah.
But one was off of a guy's somebody's hands. Might have been, I can't remember who it was. Evans. I don't remember. So one was off of one of his receivers' hands. None of those turnovers were Brady's fault.
Speaking of Brady, Cliff Kingsbury was speaking about Brady still getting it done at his age.
It makes me feel very inadequate as a man, but no, it's just phenomenal. I mean, I've seen it firsthand, the work that he puts into it and how he's dedicated his entire existence to that. Right there, and To still see that competitive fire that he has, it's inspiring.
The way the question was phrased, how do you feel about Tom Brady, who's older than you, still being on a football field winning football games?
It makes me feel very inadequate as a man.
Yeah. I could get in line on that one.
Join the club.
Yeah.
Join the club.
Time to see Tom Brady.
To
the point where this guy's doing commercials for Subway, and he doesn't eat bread.
They
actually pointed out.
And they make fun of the fact that he doesn't eat bread during the commercials. Yeah.
He'll still sell Subway sandwiches even though he doesn't eat bread.
We've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. ASU, one of the few heavy favorites to win on this week's Pac-12 schedule, but to handle UNLV the way they're supposed to, there's one very specific thing they're going to have to do on Saturday night. We'll tell you what it is next on the Burns and Gambo show. Steve Keim set to join us in just over 10 minutes at 3 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo show, so stay tuned for the Cardinals general manager in the meantime to take a look at the college football schedule this weekend and specifically the Pac-12 schedule. There are all sorts of compelling matchups for the conference, playing mostly out-of-conference teams this weekend. ASU's game is not among them. They are 34.5-point favorites against UNLV, but there is a player in particular to keep an eye on in this game for ASU as they're taking on the Rebels, and that's their senior running back, Charles Williams. He is very, very good.
Yeah, the Chuck Wagon is what they call him. They call him the Chuck Wagon, and he's 5'9". He's not a big guy. He's 5'9", but he is powerful. He is really powerful. Now they don't win a lot of football games, but this is a guy you're worried about. You're worried about him because he's a guy that could really. He's got 10 career 100-yard rushing games. He's a touchdown machine. So he's a guy that you definitely got to be prepared to try to shut down and stop. If you do that, you got a good chance of winning a football game. Look, UNLV's not good. We know it. You just said what the point spread was. They went 0-6 last year in the pandemic shortened season. They lost their first game to EWASH in double overtime. But you are talking about a very dynamic back in Charles Williams that you've got to find a way to kind of contain. Because if they're going to find a way, UNLV, to pull an upset or stay in this game, it's going to be behind
him. Yeah, 172 rushing yards last week. Fourth running back in program history to get over 3,000 career rushing yards. So he's good. And Herm Edwards talked about having to slow down that run game.
Defensively, we got a task ahead of us with this run game they have. Because they do a nice job running the ball, so we got to get that stopped.
Antonio Pierce, the same thing.
Those guys have to do a good job up front of being gap sound. Last week we got cut off a couple times on those stretch runs. You got to do a better job of that. Guys got to do their assignment, understand the execution of the defense. And it's going to be challenging. It's good. I mean, you love to have a physical game after a game like last week where they kind of toss it around a little bit, more perimeter runs. If they're going to play smash-mouth football, we're going to need that for the upcoming weeks that we got coming up.
Down south, Arizona is opening up their home portion of the schedule, taking on San Diego State. I know Jed Fish has been really active on social media all week, challenging the students to come out and fill the student section, trying to create as much of a home field advantage as he possibly can. This one, for as bad as U of A is expected to be this year, U of A favored by 2 points in this game, so there's some expectation that probably based off of how they played against BYU that they could give San Diego State a game at home and get that first win of the season for them.
Yeah, well, they've lost 13 games in a row, so they're trying to, you know, the last time they won a game, you've got to go back to October 5th, 2019. So we're quickly approaching 2 years, and it's over 700 days the last time that they won a football game. I liked the Gunnar Cruz. He made his first start last week, and he did pretty good. 34 completions, 45 attempts, 336 yards. Now, Fish says he's going to continue to use both quarterbacks, but I did like the way Cruz played, and they were able to hang in that game. They only lost by 8 to BYU, but I do think that I think Gunnar Cruz is probably your best quarterback going forward. It'd be nice to get this one because there's not going to be many wins on the table for Arizona. So this San Diego State game is one you look at and you say, okay, you think that they should win it.
Yeah, he was. Jed Fish was asked that earlier in the week. Gunnar Cruz, Will Plummer, yeah, think both of them are going to play. We'll see. Although Cruz ended up taking the vast majority of the snaps As you mentioned, he took 79 of the 88 snaps in last week's opener against BYU, but Jed Fish continues to say that he'll continue to kind of bounce back and forth. If you were to look at the whole big picture schedule for college football,
can Oregon do it?
Can Oregon? That's the question. And our guy John Wilner pointed out in his kind of preview piece today that the Pac-12 has not recorded a non-conference regular season win over an AP top 10 team since Stanford beat Notre Dame back in 2017. Take Notre Dame out of the equation, and the last time the Pac-12 beat a top 10 team in the regular season, you have to go back 7 years to 2014 when Oregon beat 7th-ranked Michigan State. Oregon is at Ohio State. I think they're in trouble. I think Ohio State kind of looked shaky last week. I know they looked shaky last week. And I have a bad feeling in the horseshoe that Oregon's going to be in for a long, long day on Saturday.
You know, they're 9-0. Ohio State's 9-0 against Oregon. So they've never lost to them. The last time they played was the 2014 National Championship season. And that's when, you know, they had Ezekiel Elliott and Cordell Jones. Ohio State clobbered them in that game in 2014. Oregon was the only Pac-12 North team that didn't lose last week. But I don't know what to think of this game because Oregon played so poorly last week. I mean, they barely got by over Fresno State.
Yeah.
But Ohio State didn't look good against Minnesota. Now, I don't know about this C.J. Stroud. He made his first start last week. I wasn't impressed when I watched the game against Minnesota. Minnesota probably could have won that game. That running back that's out for the season, that was fantastic. I do like Chris Olave, the wide receiver, and Garrett Wilson. They got great wide receivers. But Oregon's chance in this game is probably with their running game because I like C.J. Verdi and Travis Dye. They've got good running backs. So, and Minnesota ran for over 200 yards against Ohio State. So if Oregon can get the running game going, they might be able to stay in this game. I'm looking forward to it. I just am not sold on Ohio State yet because I don't love their quarterback. But I still find it hard to believe that Oregon's going to go in there and win that game.
Yeah, me too, especially with Kayvon Thibodeau's injury, and that kind of factors into all of this. The Buckeyes are a 2-touchdown favorite at home right now based off of the last, you know, kind of line that I looked at. The only, I mean, all the intriguing games this weekend, the only one that doesn't involve a Pac-12 school is Iowa-Iowa State. I'm really looking forward to that one. I think that's going to be a very good game. All the other big games this weekend, it's really interesting. Cal versus TCU, Cal's a big underdog. Washington at Michigan, Washington is an underdog on the road in that game. Texas A&M taking on Colorado, Colorado's a huge underdog in that game. It's a real prove-it weekend for the Pac-12. They have to go play some really good football teams this weekend. It's a chance, I guess, for a bit of a redemption for the Pac-12 this weekend.
I think that Iowa State coach is phenomenal. Matt Campbell.
Yeah, he's really good.
That guy is legit. He's a great coach. Now, they're at home in this game, and I think they're both ranked in the top 10. Is that
right?
Yeah,
it's Iowa State's 9, Iowa's 10, yeah.
Yeah, so the Hawkeyes have won the last 5. So Iowa's won the last 5.
Yeah.
So this will be an interesting game. It'll be a close game. I'd love to see Iowa State pull off the upset.
When we come back, he spent the past offseason retooling the Cardinals roster, and now we're just days before the first game of the season. How does Steve Keim feel about his team? You'll hear from the GM next on the Burns and Gambo Show.